What's up, everybody? What's going on? Hey, Larry, what's going on, buddy? Today we're doing our Oscars pod where we
Yeah.
are talking about the best films from late December to mid-January, pretty much. Now, I'm just kidding, but another year in the movie book in the movie year has is come and gone. It's quite crazy with an Oscars with the Oscar strike, with a actors and writers strike. But people still came to the movies. There was a lot of talk about, and movies are here to stay. So why don't we talk about who the Academy thinks is the best movies? Who, what the Academy thinks are the best movies, best directors, actors, writers, all of that. So I have Ryan Page with me today to do the 2024, or I should say, this is the 96th annual Academy Awards. 96. Yes, I get this. 96. So let us make our predictions for the 96 Academy Awards. Ryan, what's going on?
Not much, man. How are you?
Good, good. I'm excited to do this. This is our fourth Oscars we're covering on the show in total. First time we have you, Ryan, to talk with
Yeah,
us. So this is
excited.
really exciting. No Chris Bailey this time. Chris had to work, but we do wish him well for the next time, as he's rising in his acting career. Ryan, one of the films that came out this year was the movie No, Jennifer Lawrence. Did you happen to see it was on Netflix? Jennifer
The
Lawrence, where she plays like
oh
the hitch type.
yeah. Oh God, what's it? And then that kid, like his parents. Are we allowed to
Yeah.
do spoilers? Yeah. His
No hard
parents pay
feelings.
the yeah, no, yeah. The parents pay the Yes,
So,
I
did you
know the
see it?
movie. No. I didn't see it,
Okay.
but I know the movie.
So Chris had a big part in it, and
Oh, look at
very big.
that.
He actually had a scene with Jennifer Lawrence in that film.
That's
So
very
one
exciting.
step closer. Yeah, he's legitimately on his way. So we're proud for Chris there. So we'll catch him a little later. But I think it's fair to say right now, everything's off the board, on the board. This is a spoiler. This is all spoilers in this podcast about all of the films nominated, and at least from what we've seen. So, sorry if you get spoiled, but I think it's fair. I think a lot of this is a nice mixture of the films that the Academy recognize, a bunch of definitely well-known blockbuster films. We have the indies, we have the Oscar bait. I think there's something here for everyone this year, and I do think it was a great
Yeah.
year for film. Like if we go from, obviously, it's been a pandemic affected decade, if you will. And we'll say if 2022 was the first year we're quote unquote back to normal, then this is 2023 is like we're really back to normal, where we don't have to be so shocked that we're getting back to normal. Now this is like the true back to normal year. A full year with theaters open, streaming services have proven their influence in the industry. And the one thing that I can honestly say is it's great to see filmmakers continuing to put out great stuff. Even if the big studios want to keep doing franchises, we still have auteurs making legitimate original stories, and those are getting properly recognized. So I think it was a mixture for everybody in this year of film. Don't you think, Ryan?
I do, and I'll just say this year in particular, a lot of the movies we're going to talk about were also, I mean, they were obviously not franchise movies, but they were big movies. Several
Yeah.
of them were very big movies, either on the platform that they were on, or I mean, box office, and two very high profile cases. So that doesn't always happen. A lot of times there's a bit of a divide between what people, quote unquote, the public are seeing and
Right.
what's being celebrated. And that will probably still happen, or could still happen anyway. But now people will at least know some of the top contenders for pretty much all of the major categories, because most of America saw two of the biggest movies of the summer. So,
That's right. You might have actually seen some of these films this year. So, yes, let's break it down. 96 Academy Awards this Sunday. We'll have our reaction to the Oscars a week from today, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel once again. Ryan, are you interested in that part of the ceremony at all? Just curious.
Well, he'll be better than Joe Coy.
Oh boy, Joe Coy.
So I'm glad that they've got someone who knows what they're doing for the hosting gig, but I'll be honest, no, the Oscars have gotten less and less like actually entertaining to view.
Yeah.
It's become more and more about the results. At this point, it's like the build up to the Oscars, you know, people talking about what's going to happen, the, you know, For Your Consideration campaigns that are at this point everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, now everyone sees the same thing. they put, you know, maybe not the exact same thing, but they post everywhere. They post widely that, you know, they're trying to win an Oscar, essentially. And then, you know, so we can all follow along. And then the day of is not really a day for us. That's the day for the folks who are in the industry actively, you know, part of the sets or sets, part of the film, part of the, you know, writers, teams, whatever. That's for them. It's not interesting to regular people anymore. Regular people are tired of watching the rich folk just sit there and clap. It's not interesting anymore.
Yeah. You know, I've learned as I've grown over, like, my love of film itself keeps growing and growing, like the actual storytelling, the presenting of a movie. And this is a real night for Hollywood in itself. And, you know, definitely no, not take it away from this amazing accomplishment. But as the years have gone on, we've seen this before. We've seen, you know, if people want to make a political statement, if people want to put a certain agenda, there's that audience. If there's people who want to, you know, as you mentioned, clap for yourself almost. And it really takes a catastrophe for people to start talking like
Joe Coy.
I mean, if we talk about that, that's Golden Globes, but for the Oscars itself, you either have to have somebody getting slapped for everybody to talk about the Oscars. You need them to literally mess up the best picture, getting the best picture wrong. It seems there has to be some controversy. And of course, there's a place for if you love film and stuff, but I think it is worth noting, despite saying all of that, and the Oscar brand definitely enhances a film. Hence why I do think it's worth talking about and will continue to worth talking about. All we're saying is we could get the same feeling and result from a 3-minute clip on YouTube than actually watching the telecast.
Yeah, yeah, this is not insulting, really, the achievement of winning an Oscar. And if I was in one of these movies, or if I directed or wrote one of these movies, then I would absolutely want to be there, sitting there, watching what's going on, even if I didn't win. Like, it's supposed to be celebrating the people on the inside. Like I said, it's their it's their day. Just for everybody else, you could get the same information off TikTok much quicker. So I think that that's probably going to be why, if we see a big variance in people who are talking about the Oscars versus have actually viewed the Oscars when the viewership results come out, that will be why. Because everyone was talking about it online, but they weren't actually watching it. They were just engaging with the content online.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, moving on to that, your most nominated film this year is Oppenheimer. I think Oppenheimer is going to have a great Sunday, Oscar Sunday. But despite that, we'll go over the categories that everyone's interested in. But I think the film as a whole, this is the way I look at it, especially the Best Picture nominations, right? 10 Best Pictures. I feel like half of them are genuine films like you must see. Half of the 10 Best Picture. So I happen to see all 10 Best Picture nominees. Some I like more than others. I think there are five of them, or I should say four or five, that are like must-see films, honestly, that you have to see eventually once in your life. And the other five are, you know, no doubt great films in their own way. Maybe one's okay. But you know, they're just kind of there. But no, of course, you know, basically, a better way to say this, I think four of these films will be talked about for many years to come, maybe eventually become classics. And the other six, though, great films, they're just fine. And, like, maybe not everyone's seen, but you have to go out of your way to find it, if that makes sense.
Can I ask which four?
Yeah.
We just jump right into the Best Picture? That's what the people want anyway, Matt.
Exactly, exactly. What they want. So I think the best way to go about it, let me list the 10. I'll tell you which ones I think will last a long time for generations, and then we'll you and I will make our picks and who we think will win the big thing. We'll have a graphic up there for Oscar Sunday, and let's see how far or close we are to actually making the right picks. So let us begin with the Best Picture nominations. So as I mentioned, this is going to be a 10-picture category this year. And let us start first with American Fiction nominated. You can find that. You could either find it in theaters or rent it yourself, not on a streaming service at this time. But, you know, that stars, it's pretty much stars a black, let me, I was saying, do I do the official, you know what, I'll just tell you what I think. So pretty much American Fiction is pretty much about a stereo, it's a satire about how an African-American writer is hired to write a book, but it needs to be, for lack of a better term, more black. And then we talk about the deeper themes requiring that on American society and stuff like that. But pretty much American Fiction is about a novelist who writes a book, and he writes it out of, you know, satire and sarcasm. Mm-hmm. And his image of being an African-American isn't exactly what the stereotypical look of the African-American look. So nice commentary there with Jeffrey Wright. We have Anatomy of a Fall, which is pretty much a French court drama, which is all over the place, if you ask me. That's my least favorite, but that I will say there. But it was interesting, but confusing to say the least. But it's interesting, the French court drama. And again, we're going to spoilers. Ryan, have you seen this film?
I have. I've only not seen one of them. So my apologies. No, my apologies to the Zone of Interest. Matt's going to have to carry that. I did not see it.
Well, Anatomy of the Fall, and it wound up, as we said, this is a spoiler podcast. It wound up the dog is a killer. So how about that? Out of all that. I'm kidding. That's how I saw it.
It's like, what's it called? That's like that episode of 30 Rock where everybody's a puppet. Matt, you just filled in the blank. You're like, too much French. Dog did it.
Essentially. We have Barbie. You know, pretty self-explanatory there. The Barbie film, but pretty much Barbie has to see what's out there. And then Ken has to join her. And then that leads into chaos. So we go from there. I thought it was actually loved that a lot, film a lot. Mm-hmm. We have The Holdovers, where pretty much we have, I think, let me just make sure, set in the early 70s at a boarding school. And pretty much the kids get stuck at the boarding school during Christmas break with their favorite professor, and we see how that all unfolds there. But I actually thought it was great, the return of Alexander Payne. If you like his Artur films, he had a couple hit. So his last film was Bad Downsizing, but he finally came back 7 years later with this very angelic film. I was a big fan.
Just real quick before you continue, I actually didn't hate Downsizing, but we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. I didn't hate it either, but it was disappointing, if you say the least. I thought it was. Then we have Killers of the Flower Moon, a Martin Scorsese flick based on the genocide of Native Americans in the 1920s, post-World War I in Oklahoma, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Lily Gladstone. Fun one there. Then we have Maestro, which is the biopic on Leonard Bernstein, which is Bradley Cooper's tour divorce, and some people accusing him for Oscar baiting on this one, but I still thought it was a great film. I genuinely enjoyed it. We have Oppenheimer, which is arguably the favorite in this category, about the creation of the atomic bomb led by called him John J. Oppenheimer.
J. Robert Oppenheimer.
With some huge, huge tour de force acting performances, and Christopher Nolan, people are calling it his magnum opus, if you will. I wonder, we'll talk about that a little later, but that is the case. We have Past Lives, a romantic drama set in New York City about one Korean immigrant and her long lost love and the deeper meanings of what a past relationship can mean. Then we have Poor Things, which is, I don't even know how you explain this film, to be honest. So this one I'll tell you the official one. The plot follows Bella Baxter, played by Emma Stone, a young woman in Victorian London who comes to life through a brain transplant and embarks on an odyssey of self-discovery. So Poor Things there. I was very interested by the directing in this one. And then The Zone of Interest, definitely the most depressing film out of this. It is not rewatchable, but pretty much film is about living next to a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, based on a true story. You know, I'll pretty much watch anything except Holocaust films, and that was bleak, to say the least. So that will be number 10, though it was a very good film. I won't deny that. But I got the point across. I just saw it once and I was fine. And I believe it's actually a Polish film, but produced in America. But that's there. Now, here's the thing. Let me just say it right here. I think Oppenheimer is your best picture winner, mainly for a bunch of reasons. Do I think from this from these 10 films, was it the very best? It's very subjective and very hard to figure out. But actually, very close to Killers of the Flower Moon, but actually do think Oppenheimer, I guess in a filmmaking aspect, is the... It's hard to say. Because this can change, this answer can change tomorrow, could change next year, could change 5 years, 10 years from now. But I do think from the from all these 10 films, I will give Oppenheimer the best picture win based on its genuinely entertaining pacing, at least in the first two acts, from incredible performances from its leads, especially Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. It's insanely well directed. Very deep themes, and there's a lot to think about. And beyond that, it is based on a true story and a historically accurate one, according to critics, which only enhances the value of this film. So Oppenheimer is your best picture winner to me. And I also think to recognize Christopher Nolan, who's somebody who is as well respected as possible in the film industry and to casual movie fans and hardcore film fans. And it seems like the Academy Awards give a lot of almost lifetime achievements while you're in the middle of your career.
Yeah.
I still think The Dark Knight is his best film, but right. I do think Oppenheimer will historically be looked at as one of his best too.
The issue with Dark Knight and, you know, a couple other really good films of his is the Academy is never going to give Batman it's not. Let's just be honest. It's never going to give Batman its flowers. So, I mean, we talk about they're going to make a new categories all the time to try and take on the influx of, you know, regurgitated superhero stuff. I think you're right. I'll say it. I do think Oppenheimer is probably the most likely. I have them ranked most likely to least likely. I didn't know how else to do it, so I just wrote them down. Yeah. Most likely, least likely. And so I think Oppenheimer is clearly the most likely to win. So therefore, you know, would be my favorite to win. I wouldn't be surprised, just looking at this, if Killers of the Flower Moon won.
If Killers of the Flower Moon got its point across in 2 hours instead of 3 hours and 45 minutes, I think that would help its case.
So I'll say this. When I did this, I did obviously my ranking, right? But I also went with my favorites and the ones that I would watch with other people. So if someone came to my place and said, let's watch
The Zone of Interest.
I didn't watch Zone of Interest. So but it sounds like that would have ranked poorly. But
in the sense of feel good aspect.
Yeah, exactly. But so to be honest with you, The Killers of the Flower Moon was my least favorite movie of the nine I saw.
Really?
I mean, it was a good movie. That's why it's literally number three on my list, you know, my most likely list, because it's up there. It's one of the top, like, options in terms of movies. Even I, not liking it, can admit it was very well done. The story was interesting. Everyone acted very well in it. Or I say everyone. I actually wasn't as impressed with the Robert De Niro, but that was an accent thing. That was really it. Everything else was great. Mm-hmm. The accent was just a weird combination of Old West and somehow still Italian mobster. And so that threw me off. But I was not as high on that movie as a lot of other people, but I do think it's probably one of the other most likely movies to win if it's not Oppenheimer. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. It's comedy, right? So that's not... doesn't happen often, but American Fiction has the messaging that like an Oscar movie would like to have, you know what I mean? it was, you know, but it, in addition to having the messaging, it kind of can play with a lot of different folks. I don't know how many people saw it. I don't know how it did in terms of like box office, but
yeah, at this moment,
having
it's a,
seen it.
So it's made at, based on a $10 million budget, it made 200, sorry, not 200, $22.4 million.
Right. So
for a technical Amazon film, but not released on Amazon yet. So that'll probably be the streamer to it. It was released from the old film, from the old revitalized film company known as Orion. So yep. Like they were, you know, very big in the 80s and 90s. Then they shut down and then they relaunched about 10 years ago. And this is their, I guess, one of their big first comeback films. But it's an Amazon film, though, ultimately.
Yeah, yeah. And so I do think that there's, I would say if I was ranking that top three, right, I would put, you know, Oppenheimer and Killers next to each other as the one and two, most likely, with American Fiction actually being the dark horse, which stinks because I really like Maestro. But I don't.
Yeah.
I think that for Maestro to win would be absolutely, to me, it would be a complete reversal of what I thought was going to happen, almost. So I have it like dead in the middle of the pack. I don't see it. I feel bad for Bradley Cooper. I don't see a good night for him. But
so
I
one
think
of the things,
Oppenheimer.
Ryan, we talked about this a couple of times, but the fact that it is Oscar week, your feelings now with Maestro itself. As mentioned, it was accused of Oscar baiting, and I showed you that joke from Screen Junkies from Academy Award loser Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
So I guess this is this is now his stereotype until he actually wins. You will be known as an extremely ambitious filmmaker who is a loser when it comes to Oscars, and when he tried really hard this time for a genuinely good film, it seems to have backfired.
Very good
people
film.
Are and people are making fun of this. I saw people, you know, pointing out how he was crying because he said he missed Leonard Bernstein, even though he never met him. People are talking about how seriously he took this, maybe a little too seriously. You did mention it on a tweet, Cab, but is there anything else to add to it, even if it's just simply telling people, like, why do you care so much? Let the man live.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to win an Oscar. If you're an actor or a director or a producer, and he's like all three in this movie.
And writer.
Yeah, like if you're in this industry, right? You want to be recognized as an Oscar winning actor, director, producer, writer. You want that. That's what you want in your life. It's the culmination of a lot of hard work, and it shows that you do take it seriously, and you're a talented individual. Like that's what it shows. This is a trade award. It means the people in the trade that you're in got together and said, you were the best in our trade this year. Congratulations. It's not a popularity contest. If so, Barbie would have all the awards, and it's not going to have it. It might not have any. Barbie might lose all of the awards it's nominated for.
Except maybe best song, maybe this.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about stuff when we get through. But you know what I mean? Like, if that was the case, then yeah, Barbie would be the shoo-in for all the categories. That's not how it works. It works as the, you know, the experts in the field get together, look at all the other experts in the field, and say which expert was the best. So if you don't want that, then you're probably not. If you don't want that in your life, generally speaking, if you don't think you need to be the best, that's fine. But like, don't criticize people for trying to be the best. If you want to just sit where you are quietly and take what's handed to you, then absolutely, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't get mad at someone for trying to be the best, because ultimately that's the point of this award, of everything, really.
And why do you think people, be that as it may, too? I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
you make the fair point of that. But why are people single-handedly pointing out of Bradley Cooper? Is it because he's known as one of the most famous actors in Hollywood? Is it a little too obvious you'd play this gay, famous composer period piece?
I mean,
why are they singling him out specifically, do you think? When clearly you could single out anybody in this, in all these categories for Oscar baiting like that, at least in terms of the director producer's role who tried to make it.
So I think it's twofold. Part number one, where Bradley Cooper started. He started not in this space. He moved into this space from a far less serious space. It's the same thing that Adam Sandler gets on most of his serious-ish movies now, with the exception of, what, Uncut Gems? Is like the only truly serious role he had where no one made fun of him. So like it's the same deal. He started. He's the dude from The Hangover. He started in The Hangover, not started, but like his biggest.
Yeah,
his biggest movie
role.
At the beginning. Yeah. So that's so people see that. It's number one. Started. People think he's left his lane.
I see.
And two, I'll be honest. People got mad when they saw the fake nose. And I think genuinely Twitter is so toxic. No, seriously, I think Twitter is so toxic that they decided at that moment, truly, that they were going to hate this film and hate Bradley Cooper in this film forever. There was a section of people who were so into protecting the late Leonard Bernstein's freaking nose, despite the, you know, conversation that his actual family had saying, there would be no problem with the nose is fine. Stop thinking about the nose and go watch the film about our, you know, our father and grandfather or whatever. Yeah, even with that wasn't enough for the Twitter folks who were offended about the nose thing. So I think that's twofold. Not half, but a bunch of people hated it from the very first still image because of the nose thing that went viral. And then I think other people are just like, why is the dude from The Hangover trying to win an Oscar? That's so silly. I disagree with it. Again, Austin Butler, the kid from, you know, Nickelodeon, has been talking like Elvis for the last 3 years.
It's still
no
talking
one said
like
a word.
Elvis.
Yeah, no one said a word. That was fine with everybody. But, you know, God forbid he learns how to conduct to play a conductor. Yeah. And all of a sudden, now, you know, now he's gone too far. At least he didn't think he was Elvis. I mean, Elvis, this fake Elvis was hanging out with Priscilla and stuff. Like, come on. Or whatever. Like,
man.
Ridiculous that people were picking on him. But they were.
And it seems like this is going to follow him for a while, too, man.
I think after this, he's probably done for a while. He spent a lot of time on this. He's going to go back to the drawing board. He's not going to just make, you know, another movie.
If he said on his last Howard appearance in January, he was going to direct a comedy with Will Arnett. So maybe we'll see if he pounces there. He said he has, based on his age and how long he A Star Is Born and Maestro, there took 10 years of his life already. And he's actually, he's not old, but he's not as young as, how old do you think Bradley Cooper is?
52.
He's 49, but you know, like I said, so if he makes a movie every 5 years, he said, you only have like 4 or 5 in me to actually direct it and everything. So we'll see if he ultimately crashes over. But at the end of the day,
and then the last movie in that series, no matter if it's garbage, he'll get some sort of nomination and award.
Yeah,
because they do the life, like you said, they do the Lifetime Achievement Award. If he keeps plugging at it and keeps getting nominated, eventually they'll just give it to him because that's what they do. So he'll get one eventually.
Right.
He just has to keep making movies that get nominated, and you know, that's fine.
So Ryan, why don't we just quickly finish out your list and how you ranked, and just tell me the list, just to save for time.
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so just straight on down, like I said, Oppenheimer, Killers, American Fiction, Maestro would be next.
And this is
Things.
Your favorite one or your?
Oh no, this is my
this
oh
is what
my
you
favorite
think.
One. This is the ones that I was like thinking,
okay.
Like in the order.
Okay.
So. After all that would be Barbie, then Past Lives, then The Holdovers, then Anatomy. Like I said, I didn't see Zone of Interest. But what makes me laugh is The Holdovers, I have second to last on most likely. It was my favorite of the 9 that I saw.
Very funny. Very funny film. Very
touching.
Emotional.
Yeah.
Yes, touching. I mean, we had that kid. There's definitely times you hated this professor, and we've all had a professor like... Mm-hmm. The character, his name's Paul Hunman in this. Like this grumpy old man, you have no life, stuff like
Absolutely,
that. And then
yeah.
And then you realize they're people. And like there's that scene where we have one of the kids just pretty much bash, like, man, nobody likes you. And you would think, like, you know, the old man wouldn't care, but he really was affected by it. And I think it's just part
people
of that
are,
human connection that
people are affected by it. That's the thing with all teachers, with the older generation. They care what they're a younger generation thinks, as the younger generation cares about what the older generation thinks. We care when people talk. But yeah, so The Holdovers was my favorite. Like I said, I loved Maestro. I really liked Poor Things. That was an interesting movie. that was up top, along with like the holdovers on like my watch with friends. Like I would recommend people to watch it.
Yeah.
Depends on the friends. I won't watch it with my parents for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that sort of thing. And then, like I said, my least favorite movie was Killers of the Flower Moon. I didn't care. I didn't care by the third hour. I didn't care by the second hour.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the message is fine. Like, right. You know what I mean? Like I get it. There's
Yeah.
a message and I'm glad that message is being, you know, shared with people. But the movie itself didn't have any, nothing in that movie justified the runtime first and foremost, but I'm not just blaming the runtime for why it was my least favorite movie. I also thought that it somehow was the slowest of all the movies. And like, there was explosions, there was murder, and it still felt slower than Oppenheimer, which had just one big moment. Oppenheimer was just
Oppenheimer's all about
talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Until the one big moment. And so the idea that you can have all these like crimes and all these things happening, and that still felt slower than Oppenheimer. And
they have
similar runtime too. Like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, the Killers of Flower, Scorsese is my favorite filmmaker. That'll always be the case. And it was definitely a Scorsese film. Once again, having the criminal, once again, another, even though he does it all the time, where the main protagonist is somebody who's a criminal, where his pride is ultimately his downfall. We saw it once again, only this time it's set in the West, technically.
Yeah. But, well, but then, and then we heard like, when Robert De Niro talked, he tried the Southern or the Western accent, but it also somehow still sounded like how Robert De Niro has done every other Scorsese movie he's been in.
Right. It did feel very Goodfellas-y in that sense, especially
In
the murder scenes and he's very big into doing narration in this film. For first point of view narration with Leo's. Leo didn't get a Best Actor nom, which
I don't know that he deserved it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Maybe if there was 10 noms, good, but...
Sure, yeah, if there was more, then
this definitely
sure.
wasn't a memorable one in the sense... It wasn't an all-time great performance, but he was still really good in it, and I liked it. And I have to save you this quick joke really quick. what they say about him. I'm just going to put it to the mic. Can you hear this?
Yeah. But relatable role for women. Mm-hmm. Knowing Leo's a scumbag, but having a crush on him anyways.
Talking about Lily Gladstone's character in this.
I will say, captured my attention the entire time. It was literally the only thing that I cared about in the entire movie. Certainly by the end, was Lily Gladstone. I hope, as much as I actually told you when I saw Maestro, that I thought that both Bradley Cooper and Carey Mulligan could win. I don't think either of them will. I would love for it to be Lily Gladstone. Again, because as much as I disliked that movie, I really thought she did an awesome job keeping my attention. She really was like the center of the film in a way that was strange, because for so much of the film, she was laid up. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like she was doing any of this stuff. You know, she was the victim of the film. She played the victim, and yet somehow, despite being in this victim's pose of constantly in danger and always, you know, always on death's door, she was still the most compelling bit of the movie to me. So, and everyone's best scenes were with her, in my opinion.
Right. I think so, too. And might as well switch that really quick to the best actress category. With her playing Molly Burkhart, then we have Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of the Fall, Sandra Voigtler, Carey Mulligan and Maestro as Felicia Montenegro, Emma Stone in Poor Things as Bella Baxter, and Annette Bening in Naiad, playing Diane Naiad. So I've seen all these but Naiad. I don't plan on seeing Naiad, but I'm sure it's a great film. It's on Netflix. It is about Diana Naiad's multiple attempts in the early 2010s to swim the Straits of Florida with flashbacks of early life. Oh, that's cool, I guess. But anyways, with these four, I think it's fair. Lily Gladstone is our favorite in this, though Carey Mulligan was absolutely breathtaking. Mm-hmm. She's always great in everything she does. And Emma Stone making a push as well, playing a dim-witted, childlike Bella Baxter.
But not even. Like, only the first half. That's what made that so cool. By the end, it was totally, you know, a lot of range in that character, the way it was written.
Right.
She had to do a lot. And she did all of it, which I thought was great.
So it seems that her and Lily Gladstone are we'll go head to head in this one. And so, I'll ask Ryan, who do you think, in the Academy's sense, who played the best in terms of their character work and who had the better performance, Emma Stone or Lily Gladstone?
So here's what I think makes this hard. I think Lily Gladstone, as I said, was instrumental to the movie, right? Obviously. It's about her money. But at the same time, there was long stretches of the movie where Lily Gladstone was laid up in bed, and it was, you know, De Niro, DiCaprio, Jesse Plemons, the whole, you know, the whole gang.
Yeah, the cat and mouse chase.
Yeah, doing their cowboy stuff, right? Whereas in Poor Things, I mean, it was about Emma Stone's character. Like, there is no way around it. Everything had to revolve around her. She was the star of the show. Everything that happened to her or in front of her. Her reaction to it was the point of the movie, because it was about her growing and all, you know what I mean? Like, it's about her growing. That's the point of the movie. And so she had to grow. So I would say it's close. I really would. I think that ultimately they're going to look at it and they're going to say that the best actress should probably go to Lily Gladstone. She, I think, had a lot of. She had to stand out in a cast full of men.
Of legendary actors and Academy Award winners themselves.
Yes, and winners.
Reckon Poor Things did too, but with, you know, the
sure, but. Yeah, but they were definitely more bit characters. None of those people would be like main character. No one had main character energy in that movie besides really her. And I guess to some extent, if you had to pick an actor to be the main character, it would be Mark Ruffalo's character, since he just has the most screen time. But you know what I mean? Like, so I think that ultimately it's easy to stand out when the movie's written for you to be the star. It's not quite as easy to do when you have to share a screen with either Robert De Niro or Leonardo DiCaprio the entire time, and she still managed to. So I think that looking at that, I think that will ultimately be what pushes it to Lily Gladstone.
And we'll take that. No problem there. Emma Stone already has an Oscar too, so you know.
Yeah.
Might as well get someone new.
But very good, very good. Poor Things was an awesome movie. One of my favorites from the year. My top three.
I think Emma Stone, this will be one of her fond performances and a great, great filmography. So now
it's also the most, it's most rewatchable, I think, probably. I think that people will rewatch Poor Things far more often than they rewatch literally any other movie on here, with the exception of like Barbie and The Holdovers, right? The other two comedy kind of movies. I think Poor Things is one of the most rewatchable of this 10.
All right. Good take on that one. So looking at the best actor category, though, Ryan, now we're going, like, as I said, looking at best actor, going to the men's side on this one. There's a lot of heavy hitters here for best actor. From Bradley Cooper and Maestro as Leonard Bernstein, Colman Domingo as Rustin, as he portrayed Bayard Rustin, Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers as Paul Hunnam, Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer as J. Robert Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction as Thelonious Monk Ellison. As I say, Thelonious. So it's not that hard per se, but you can make a case at any of these. I haven't seen Rustin, though, but for the other four, I think you can make a case that anyone can actually win this thing. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to go to Cillian Murphy. He's been winning all the other acting awards during the season. I do think his transformation as an Irishman to this big American figure has to be noted. And playing somebody with so much emotional weight to him, and you understand that weight. And even in the most unsexy scene of all time, it was important to the story to feature that. And I guess there is no other way to portray. You know, he lost his security clearance because of that unsexy sex scene. I'm sure that didn't happen in front of the crew, but you know what I'm saying. But I think he played a vital part. And even in that scene, you can see the emotional draw it portrayed. I do think it was a depressing role, but it was an important one. And I do find it entertaining, and especially the aspects of the science part of it. and speaking Dutch and showing how intelligent this man is, he completely transformed himself into that. And for that, it's going to be pretty cool to see the guy from Peaky Blinders, the guy who's been a supporting actor his whole life.
You're right.
Get
an ass- best actor.
Yeah. So it's going to be a pretty cool thing to see. That's probably the most interesting thing I will get out of this Academy Awards, is seeing Cillian Murphy win and everything else. I mean, I'll still watch everything else, but I think that's what I'm most interested in, to see who wins this award.
So you cover this more than me. So let me ask you, because I think this happens, not all the time, but often enough, the Oscars does like to throw a curveball.
Yes.
Against the other awards in the season. So the other awards all go before the Oscars. A lot of times the Oscar likes to throw a curveball at, you know, at everybody and go in a different direction. And so the fact that Oppenheimer is winning could actually be marked against it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like an example of it last year was Jamie Lee Curtis winning an Oscar for Everything Everywhere All at Once in the supporting actress role. A lot of people thought her co-star should have actually won, whose name I can't think at the moment, but that is an example of that. You know, Moonlight winning the best picture over La La Land. You know, some recent memories that, that definitely is a case. But so having said that, a lot of people actually think Paul Giamatti might be the one. He's had a long established career. Maybe he finally gets recognized. Maybe that happens. I still think Cillian Murphy will hold it down despite that. But anything's possible.
100%.
Yeah.
I think he's
I do think he played the best out of this.
Yeah. I do think that the actor, supporting actor, supporting actress, those are probably the three where the curveballs are more likely. I don't think they're going to not give it to Oppenheimer just because everybody else picked Oppenheimer. I think director, which we'll probably talk about next, soon, will go where it's going to go regardless. But I do think that there's a shot that one of those three, or more than one of those three, kind of sees a hard turn just for the sake of being different, it seems.
That's what I think, too. But and I tell you, I have a specific pick that is going against the type in one of the other acting categories where I think that might happen. But ultimately, I do think Cillian Murphy, with all the press he's doing, and you learn that a lot of these award seasons are about campaigning for yourself, the studio campaigning, giving gifts, basically kissing voters' asses so that you can actually win. And I see Cillian Murphy everywhere. I don't know if you happened to see he was on 60 Minutes 2 weeks ago. Very good story. Did you happen to watch it?
I didn't, but I did watch the Actors on Actors with him and Margot Robbie, which was awesome. But yeah, and he's also not usually known for this. So the fact that he is so active is definitely proof that he's doing all the things he needs to do. And I agree with you. I have him written down here as well.
What's great about Cillian Murphy is just, he's like against Hollywood without like trying to be against the Hollywood, I would seem, if that makes sense. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm too good for Hollywood. I think he really is genuinely a normal person who just happens to know how to act really well.
Right. Yeah. And also, I think it helps that he's, you know, had success not in Hollywood because, you know, he's from Europe. So he has had a career over there, which means he can just leave. You know, he's not stuck in Los Angeles all the time.
He's out in Ireland. Becky Lynch. Right.
Sure, maybe. but you can tell. You can feel that he's not stuck in Los Angeles all the time.
Yeah.
And I think people like that. Maybe they shouldn't. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I think people like that.
I will say the other one, I wouldn't be surprised if Paul Giamatti sneaks it in, too, for his longest out of his career, too. He's been.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like if you notice, he's underrated. He's one of the most underrated actors. He's in star TV shows. He's been around for like three decades as a leading man, and maybe he's not the conventional.
He doesn't look like a leading man, but he is a leading man in a lot of things. Yeah.
So maybe this is his time. From Big Fat Liar, that was the first time I saw him. Was Big Fat Liar.
I think that must have been mine too. But I saw the John Adams. And that was good. I liked that.
I never saw that. Is it good?
Yeah, I liked it. It was good.
See, there you go. There. Miniseries with HBO. Billions that just ended. Had a great decade run. And here we are. Holdover. So let's see if that'll be an interesting race. So it's definitely either Giamatti or Murphy, but I will say Jeffrey Wright and Cooper definitely could win this in the general aspects, but people don't want to recognize Bradley Cooper this year, and I don't know what Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright's had a great career himself.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, you're right. It could be any of them, but I do think it's probably still Murphy.
Right, absolutely. So let's now switch from the acting really quick. Let's go to Best Director. I will say a shoo-in. I would bet legitimate money on this if I could. But your Best Director nominations include Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Martin Scorsese, again, for Killers of the Flower Moon, Justine Trite for Anatomy of a Fall, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, which insanely well directed, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. And which one of these? One of these has a... One of these... I'll save for later, but... So here we go with this one, Ryan. As I said, I think it's pretty obvious. You got to give it to Christopher Nolan. Even if they just want to give it to him for saving the theaters, even though people want to say last year Tom Cruise was the person to do that, but I think Christopher Nolan, who is strictly theater or bust, really proved that people will come to see a movie set in the 1940s with big Hollywood actors and come to see it with mostly talking in it.
Yeah, sometimes you have to read like the tea leaves to figure out what's going on, and sometimes they hit you over the head with the frying pan, and that's what this is. Anyone who's on social media or has seen a television in the last however many months has seen that basically they're announcing like, this is Christopher Nolan is the greatest director of the year. They've basically been saying that out loud for months now. They've made absolutely no bones about hiding this. If it's not Christopher Nolan, I would be shocked. I won't even try and like go through the other options just to have a conversation. We can move on. It's going to be Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan, that's that's the one guaranteeing this one. So might as well transition now to Best Supporting Actor. We have another favorite in this, but it also includes Sterling Kane Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and then Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. I will say one thing here. I do not think Ryan Gosling as Ken was an Academy Award nominated performance.
No, I disagree.
Don't think it was. I think there were other performer ones. I'd love to hear your take, but I did not see Ken as an Academy Award winning performance. But who am I? But good for Ryan Gosling, though. And he's still one of the best actors out there. I do think, though, another shoe-in almost to complete really one of the greatest comeback stories ever is Robert Downey Jr. as Oppenheimer playing Louis Strauss. And think about this, Ryan, you're aware.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. has been around since the 80s. Had a lot of personal struggles where he was in jail for years in the late 90s, early 2000s. Then he is released, changes his life around, becomes the biggest actor in Hollywood with the role of a lifetime in Iron Man, plays Iron Man and Tony Stark for 10 years. Then after that, though, you'd think already that proves the greatest comeback story. He plays a genuine, Louis Strauss, this selfish, jealous,
slimy politician,
petty, slimy politician to great effect. And I do think he played the best role out of all of these, though you could make a case for Mark Ruffalo, too. But I still think Robert Downey Jr. getting an Academy Award makes the most sense.
So I went a different direction here, actually. I think it was Mark Ruffalo, though he'd be fun, too. Mm-hmm. I said, because, again, I'm expecting a swerve. I'm expecting something. I think it's here in particular. And so I thought Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction has a very good shot. The reason I say that is the characters as like they're portrayed in the movie, right? The main character he's an academic. He feels in a lot of ways, I mean, I don't want to say one note. He's not one note, but like the academic thing underpins all of it. That's what makes him being his Stag Arlie funny, is he has to put on a voice to do it. And so Sterling K. Brown has the one of the more interesting roles. He can be comedy when he's with his uptight brother. He can be serious when he's with the rest of the family and when he has his own subplot. I thought he had to do a lot. I thought he did it a lot well. No, his role wasn't as important as some folks, and I think that's probably where he would fall short. Like, again, Mark Ruffalo and Robert Downey Jr. were both significantly more important to the overall story as written than Sterling K. Brown was, but also not really. You needed his brother. I mean, it's about family, family pain and family healing, so he needs a family to do that. But yeah, I think Sterling K. Brown actually has a very good shot. That's who I put down as my pick.
Okay, I can see that too. I still think it's Robert Downey's to win, but I want to be upset if Sterling K. Brown won. I want to be. I mean, I don't think
the
again.
The only one
I
who explain... can't win. The only one who can't win is Ryan Gosling. And not even just because. I mean, I know you said you didn't think he earned it. I did think he earned it, but with the backlash they got just by giving him the nomination. If they want Twitter to be just about one thing, then they'll give it to him, because that will consume the entire discourse online. So basically, I think they've all but confirmed it can't be him. They don't want that to happen. And there's plenty of other talented supporting actors that they could go with. So they're not going to go with Ryan Gosling and ruin their entire night with one award. So.
I see. Now, this is, we'll switch from the best supporting actress category. This is where I think the Academy might even switch it up a little.
Okay.
So your best supporting actresses here, let me just write this down. Your best supporting actresses here include Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers. Divine Joy Randolph seems to be a huge favorite, but I actually think Emily Blunt will be the one to win an Oscar, because her story, her role, I think was very underrated. I mean, she held it down playing Oppenheimer's unassumed wife. I think she played a lot of important roles in that. She helped move the story along. She was the crutch to Oppenheimer. You know, as Oppenheimer ultimately was all about, you know, protecting America, his personal life was in turmoil, and she was a big reason for pointing that out to him. And I think she did it in an effective way. So I would give it to Emily Blunt. By Stuthe, Divine Joy Randolph played a very important role as Mary Lamb as well.
Mm-hmm. So I let outside interference impact my decision here. I was making my lists, checking it twice in front of my wife, who has seen most of these movies with me, actually. Awesome. Only a few. And so I also went with Divine Joy Randolph, and she said, no. I said, what do you mean, no? She goes, it should go to America Ferrera. And I said, okay, convince me. And so she said, the one scene. Mm-hmm. And she talked about the scene where America Ferrera is explaining to Barbie what it means to be a woman outside of Barbie world. And yeah, my wife basically said that alone should give her the supporting actress. And I thought about it. And you know what? I think she's right. In addition to it being the exact sort of thing that the Academy would love to point to when they say, look at our best supporting actress, in addition to the severe backlash they're probably still going to get when they do Best Director without Greta Gerwig, I think that blunts that, which is cynical, but it will do that. But also, I think...
Again, pun intended on that one.
Yeah, but...
You said blunts that.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of Emily Blunt. But, and then I think also, just factually speaking, the point of the Barbie movie was articulated by America Ferrera. Like, not even just moving the plot forward.
You could just watch that and you understand the
point.
Movie.
Yeah. If you saw that speech, you know basically what the entire movie is trying to say, with the only thing is you don't know that about the Ken stuff. The Ken stuff isn't brought up. But the main point of that entire movie is summed up perfectly in that one, you know, kind of monologue that she has mostly to the audience, but kind of to Barbie. And so I think America Ferrera could actually win. And I mean, she was good. She was funny in the movie, and it was, you know, all sorts of other great things. But again, I think that one scene alone, it really resonated with a lot of people. And a lot of people who vote on this thing are probably had the same kind of resonance that the folks I saw it with, like my wife or whatever, had with that scene and with that character. So I think there's a very good shot for that, and that'll be what they hold up as Barbie's, you know, Barbie's big day, sort of thing.
I can see that happening too. And what was I gonna say there? That would make a good amount of sense, and it would make a statement. So we'll see how the Academy voters go with this. So there's two more categories to go over that I think are the most relevant. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look at the best original screenplay. And the way you look at how do you pick who develops the best screenplay, both adapted and original. Mm-hmm. So basically the way I think you should look at it is based on the plot, what exactly happens, a list of things that happen, the story itself, what is the meaning behind that plot, and if it's relevant, if it makes sense, the characters and the dialogue. So those four things, plot, story, characters, and dialogue. Which film did the best at doing that, getting their point across, while also being entertaining? So with the original screenplay, we have Anatomy of a Fall, Justine Trite, and Arthur Harari. We have The Holdovers, written by David Hemmingson. We have Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer's written film, Maestro. Then we have May December, which is based on a true story. And that was written by Sammy Birch. It's on Netflix.
That's a weird one.
Yeah,
that one I know, actually.
Student-teacher relationship. Wasn't impressed. I do like the director, though. And then we have Past Lives with Cillian Song. So this is an interesting one. I think you got to give this one. I think The Holdovers will get this one. I think that is the best way with the interesting characters, interesting dialogue, a very emotional story. It can be funny when it needs to. It paces very well. That's the one thing. One of the subcategories, how does it pace? Like, for instance, if you had Killers of the Flower Moon, which isn't nominated for a writing category, you might not have liked the pacing of it. Hence, that might have brought it down a little bit. But out of those five, though, Ryan, I say The Holdovers. Who do you think gets it?
It could be. I think all five of those, actually, including May, December, are really good stories, actually. You know, just looking at them as, you know, because not worrying about how that performers did, right? Just worrying about the story. I think they're all really good stories. I think Past Lives is super interesting. That'd be a great shout. I think The Holdovers definitely turned into the best film, in my opinion, of those five. And so that counts for something, too, because a great original screenplay has to eventually go to screen.
Yeah.
And so the one that goes to the screen best is definitely a strong contender. Ultimately, though, my guess, and I don't even know if this is my guess, I think this is truly a toss-up category for me. I don't know. But I would kind of like to see, and this might surprise you because I didn't love the movie, Anatomy of a Fall. I just found the way it was done, like fascinating. Mm-hmm. And the things that it explored, fascinating. Some of that is like personal, right? And things obviously hit different for different folks. But just a lot of the things that they were going through and that they were experiencing, I just found to be super interesting to look at. And I would also shout out here Past Lives. Not Past Lives, sorry. No, Past Lives, yeah. Which also, again, wasn't like my favorite movie. But just super interesting what they were exploring. I would say either of those would be my hope is that it's one of those two. I wrote down Anatomy of a Fall because I had to pick one for the show. But I hope it's one of those two, truly. As much as I like The Holdovers, and I hope The Holdovers wins as many awards as it can, I don't know that if I were picking for the Academy, would pick it.
Yeah, Anatomy of the Fall is also making a courtroom drama seem so quirky but serious at the same time. That's one thing I found interesting.
And they had to play with the idea of like relationships after someone has passed, from two perspectives, that of the son who's lost his father, as well as a wife who's lost her husband, and the complications that come around with that. It's very clear the wife has feelings for her lawyer. Spoiler alert. They don't explore it explicitly, but it's an undercurrent in almost every scene they're in together in the house. And so that's something that they have to explore, dating after a tragedy like this. She's a foreigner, so she's got to deal with, you know, the language barrier. Yeah,
the culture barrier.
Right, and that's all separate from the nuts and bolts, like you said, the aggressive prosecutor trying to, you know, pin this on the wife, because it's always on the wife, right? It's always on the husband. It's always the spouse. So you can't even blame them for doing it. You know, a person ends up dead, it's almost always their spouse that did it. But they're, you know, they're going hard, and, you know, deck is stacked, the whole nine yards, all that courtroom stuff, perfect. But all the other things they have to talk about, and, you know, the little boy doesn't know, scared of his mom, scared for his mom simultaneously. I just thought there was a lot of interesting themes that they had to play around with, and I thought they did a really good job doing it. So it wasn't the most exciting movie, which is why I think I had it lower on like my lists, but thematically it had to do a lot, and it did a lot. So
yeah, I think it was able to accomplish those clear goals. So the final category to discuss here is the best adapted screenplay category. And that is going to either American Fiction or by Cord Jefferson. Fun fact, Cord Jefferson's a Succession writer, former Succession writer. We had Barbie, Greta Gerwig, and Noah Baumbach. Oppenheimer with Christopher Nolan, solely Christopher Nolan. Poor Things by Tony McNamara, and Zone of Interest by Jonathan Glazer. So again, I would see Christopher Nolan getting another. I think he'll take the statue for the big three statues. I think he's coming home with three. As a producer for Oppenheimer, adapted screenplay, so a writing Oscar, and then a director Oscar. So going from zero Oscars to three in the same night, I think it would make the most sense. Plus, I think the way the story is written, it makes its case for it. But my personal favorite was American Fiction because of how clever it was, especially amongst its characters and its satire. But I do think Oppenheimer is the one who wins, though I want American Fiction to win.
Yeah, so I actually also want American Fiction to win, and I wrote it down. I don't think it will be Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is adapted from a book. I've not read the book. I've tried to read the book. I didn't love the book.
Did you read the whole thing?
No, God, no.
I think it's like 2,000 pages or something.
American Prometheus is a long book. I wasn't that interested. And this is not, I mean, I read a lot of fiction. I get that. But I mean, I'm right now, this is just a little fun fact for everybody. I'm actually listening audiobook to a nonfiction book about the fall of the professional wrestling territories in the 70s and 80s into the 90s. That's a dry book. There's a lot of names just going around. So I can handle some nonfiction, but American Prometheus is dry even for me. I would read, not American Fiction, sorry, Oppenheimer was a little dry for me. I would read American Fiction. If American Fiction was novelized, I'd read
it. Well, it's based on a novel called Eraser.
Right, which I'm saying, like, if they took the exact thing I just watched and made that a novel, because it's based on it, so I'm sure they're similar, but, you know, if they took exactly what I saw, with the exact conversations, if they basically just took a transcript of the movie and turned it into a novel,
yeah,
I would still read that. I found that to be very entertaining. I think if you're going to adapt something that's already written into a screenplay, you need it to be an adaptation that would be worth reading. You know what I mean? And so I think they did that. And I've not read the original source material. Maybe it's better.
Do you think you will? It's called Eraser by Percival Everett.
I mean, yeah, sure. I've never heard of it. I didn't even know it was adapted screenplay until I was preparing for this episode. I assumed it was original. So I definitely would consider reading it. But my point is that standalone from the source material, this, I think, was entertaining. Would be entertaining to read. And so that's why I think it will ultimately actually end up going to American Fiction. I get it. Three, and you're, you know, winning three on your night, one for each big category would be nice. You know, it's a nice to have. I guess Dark Horse, shout out to the fact that, you know, everyone kind of told us all to calm down about the director snub because Greta Gerwig could still win for writer. She's, I don't think she will. But I guess it's always possible, but I don't think so. I think American Fiction truly could win.
And one thing I forgot to ask, it relates to the writing. When you talk about America Ferrera's monologue, do you think that'll be one of those monologues like actors will use in their auditions and stuff for to prepare, like pick a monologue in acting class?
Yes. I will do this one. I was a music student. I was not an acting student. I was a music student for a little bit in college. But the art center that was for musicians was also where the actors were. And I heard all of the freshmen and sophomore acting students doing their monologues. It's always the same monologue. It's loud. It's the emotion being expressed is always frustration or anger. You know what I mean? I could see it becoming quickly a popular monologue amongst younger actors who think that being angry is the most complex emotion, when in reality, it's the one we all experience the easiest. So, yes, I do think a lot of people will start using it for their monologues, or at least for practicing.
Right.
I agree.
What if somebody did a WWE promo as one? It could work. I think it could work.
Way harder. I think I'll say this right now. If you're an actor, an acting student, and you're thinking, I need to do something that's really going to stand out, and therefore you have to go angry, you have to go, all these loud emotions. Look up Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times. It is the best professional wrestling promo maybe ever. There's a couple others I could think of that are close, but Hard Times, Dusty Rhodes. If you could do that, like he does that, then you're pretty good. Because if you can convey hard times with the lingo he had to use, because again, he's a pro wrestler, not a Shakespearean actor. So he had to make sure that the folks in Texas understood what the heck he was talking about. But if you could do hard times and convey those emotions, then you're pretty good. And it's way harder to convey that emotion with those words than it is to rant about the patriarchy to convey you're upset about the patriarchy. I thought it was great. Again, I think she should win for it. I'm not criticizing it. Just as an acting exercise, I think it's very obvious what it's about and what you're supposed to feel. And as long as you can feel those things, you'll be able to do that scene.
Man, so. The ideas in my head, like I wonder what some of these students will do. And I'm just thinking of the most ridiculous monologues in my head, like Green Goblins. You know how much I sacrificed? you can't do this to me.
But that feels like one that would almost be good, because you have to be like three things at the same time. That was like that character. I don't think anyone told Willem Dafoe that this was like a superhero movie. He low-key went in on it. He was like, all right, yeah. I'm this tortured man who's being run by his own inner, which is true, by the way. This is all, if you look at it as like a, you know, as a lit assignment, he's a tortured man being run by the demons in his head.
Right.
To do these horrible things. And that's exactly how he plays it. But he's across from Tobey Maguire.
Best Kiss Award winner.
Yeah. Who is not playing Spider-Man with the same sort of, you know, deep inner literary mind that Willem Dafoe is playing Green Goblin. And so, I would do the Green Goblin. I think that would be great, because no one would think to do it because it's Green Goblin. But when you think about it, as Willem Dafoe took that scene, he took that serious as a car accident. He was serious that whole time. That was also not a joke to him.
Don't forget, what was it? The end of the, in the first one too, when he's talking to himself, where it's his evil version in the mirror, which is really hard to do, especially on film. The older I get, I really learn how to appreciate his performance in that. Like, that does go in. He really could have made a case to get nominated.
They will never nominate a superhero for anything, but he's a very good actor. He was very good in this year in Poor Things as well.
I'm surprised he didn't get nominated. He probably really does have the most fascinating filmography maybe ever. Like, he doesn't seem like a real person in the sense that, like, he's been acting since the 80s.
Yep.
And he's been His earliest nomination was 86 for a Platoon, and he's still putting out all these bangers.
Yeah.
Whether he's, as a I lead mean, or yeah. supporting role. People yeah, don't appreciate how good he is.
Has he won before? He's had to have won. At least
never won. Never won. No.
I'm surprised. Yeah, then you're right. I'm surprised. I would have put him in the supporting character actor just to give it to him because
who would you switch out from this list?
Mark Ruffalo, I mean, why not?
Yeah. But again, I just think De Niro would Downey Jr., but he's definitely gonna win very soon. What a fascinating career he's had. Mm. Like I say, it doesn't even seem like a real person.
And he's a meme now too.
Yeah,
the green goblin mask thing is a meme. Like it comes up with Tom Brady a lot. There was a video of Tom Brady throwing a football at a conference, like across the conference room to some rugby player who caught it in like Australia. And someone just tweeted out, he goes, "You think the football talks to Tom Brady the way the green goblin mask talks to Willem Dafoe?"
Yeah, man, you're right. Somebody, he definitely took that too serious as a superhero movie.
I wouldn't even say too seriously. He took it, I don't know, too seriously would imply it was bad because it was good. Yeah. So I won't say too seriously, but he wasn't kidding. He wasn't, if they told him to have fun with it, he let in out the one in one ear, out the other. He was like, "No, I'm not having any fun. I'm going to be as angry as possible and tortured as possible."
I'm a bit of a scientist myself.
At the end of that movie, when he gets the glider, all of a sudden he's like, his eyes get wide, like he goes absolutely super hard in that movie.
He knows how to transform, and just some hodgepodge things. Did you have the best animated feature? Will it be Spider-Man Across the Universe? I think it'd be The Boy and the Heron. I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron, but people love that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Did you see, for Netflix, who streams amazing documentaries all the time, right? Mm-hmm. This documentary award, I don't think one Netflix film got into this category for some reason.
I think it's a shot against Netflix. I don't think they want Netflix to win that award. Let's be honest with you. I think that the documentary folks, because the way the Academy works is it's people within the within the genre. So people who are known for writing fiction are not going to be part of the voting for the documentary.
Right. It's all the documentary filmmakers who will make it.
Yeah. And there, I have to imagine, no disrespect, probably not a fun hang. So I'm going to say that they see it as less than.
Mm.
They see it as somehow, because Netflix, by the way, makes money off the documentaries. A lot of documentary filmmakers don't make a ton of money when they make a documentary film. And I think that probably makes them upset too. So yeah, I think that's, I've said they should have a streaming award that's just for streamers, like streamer exclusive. If you're, or you know what I mean? Like you have to be on streamer in order to win for however long the nominating period would be.
Right.
And then I think that would show a lot of very good documentaries and give them an award. But I think the Academy is going to try and keep Netflix docs away from their award because this is the only thing they got. Netflix makes money on their genre, then they don't.
Yeah, and I guess also some of them, if they are multiple parts, they'd probably give it to the Emmys. They'll count that, but I guess I'd have to really look into that too. But no, that kind of mutes the point anyways, because there was plenty of single documentary films that was on Netflix this past year that just didn't get nominated. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with the To Kill a Tiger, which was the national, I think that was the, I don't know, I just honestly just picked that for no reason. I thought it saw for a second was National Geographic.
We're going to cheer for To Kill a Tiger on Oscar Day. We're going to have a big campaign, see if we can't get it in the hearts and minds of people. But
And how about, do you think I'm Just Ken is going to take the Oscar for Best Original Song?
I don't think so. I don't.
By the way, the other category is What I Was Made For from Barbie, from the Billie Eilish song.
That's got a decent shot.
The Killers of the Flower Moon, I'm not even going to attempt to.
Yeah, that was a good.
Aziza, Never Went Away from American Symphony. The Fire Inside from the Flaming Hot Cheetos movie.
I think that, again, and this is not, I didn't discuss this with my wife, but seeing the movie in theaters with her, that scene.
The I'm Just Ken?
No, that was one of my favorite scenes. I love that. But the What Was I Made For? again, the song, well, especially when played with what's happening on the scene and with the quote, mothers stand still so they can see their daughters step ahead, something to that effect. I'm not misquoting it, but that's the general. Every single, like, all the, it was mostly women in the theater with me, they were all crying. That song meant a lot to people. It still means a lot to people. People still get very emotional. It fits the movie really well. It fits the scene it's in really well. I think that could be the winner, to be honest with you. I know this is not one we're going to talk about, but just since we're talking about music, we were looking at all these in the original score. We came to the conclusion, my wife and I, that Poor Things should do it, because the music of Poor Things was like literally the entire like movie. Everything that happened, you could tell by the music, it was about to happen.
Yeah.
The music spoiled.
Even
the music
over
spoiled
Oppenheimer, though,
about...
that was my fit by Ludwig Göransson.
I knew that was good too. I'm not against that one, but I was just thinking about all the movies we saw, and we happened to both see that movie too. I was like, the Poor Things music was like its own character. Our dog, when the music started playing, freaked out. It literally sat on the screen. It said, unsettling music, right? And my dog lost his mind.
Music.
He was unsettled. I think that, so I just feel like the music in Poor Things just really did a lot for the movie. It was like a big part of the movie. It was like the discordant strings and whatever. And so,
so
I think that could win. But
I think it makes a good point. You do make a good point there. Jurgsen Fendrick would be the one who would take it away if he wins.
Good job, Jurgsen.
Yeah, and this is it seems like it's from looking his only film score. But I like, personally, I'm going to go with Ludwig Göransson.
Another good shout.
Who's now Christopher Nolan's go-to composer, not Hans Gruber.
Hans Zimmer. Hans Gruber.
Dune. What's fun, my favorite Ludwig Göransson fact, he's Childish Gambino's producer too, Donald Glover's.
That's great.
He also
great.
That is, he's his legit hip hop producer. So one day he's making legitimate raps, he's making legitimate beats. Then the next day he's, you know,
Donald Glover gets into
huge.
Tom Clever gets into the studio and they're about to play the track for him to record his vocal, and it's the wrong track, and it's just like, bang.
Yeah,
no, sorry.
Right?
Sorry.
And it's a legitimate orchestration.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's clearly talented to have those people in his company. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else with the Oscars particularly that you want to point out?
No, like I said, this was a great year for movies. Some really tight races, some not so tight races, I think as well, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it shakes out the way we think it is, or how many of those curveballs that we sometimes get on Oscar day will we get this year. You know what I mean, I think that's an open question with how tight some of these races are.
I think so too, Ryan. So the last thing, we can put a bow on the Oscar talk. Let's just finish with the opposite. Saturday, the day before, is the 44th Annual Golden Raspberry Awards, a award ceremony that will honor the worst in the film industry in 2023. Could you guess who are the worst picture nominations? Can you guess at least one of them? Sure. Who is on the list of the worst? There's five.
I don't know. 2023, I did not like, I don't know.
Oh, good.
Did Marvel have a really bad movie?
No Marvel this year.
Okay.
DC, though, Shazam Fury of the Gods is a worst picture nomination. We have Expendables 4, which I didn't even know came out.
Yeah.
Expendables 4, well, it was apparently really bad. It got nominated for worst picture. Exorcist Believer, so Jason Blum will be nominated as a worst producer in this. The fact that they had a Exorcist sequel, I mean,
that was dumb.
Nobody paid attention, and it's now one of the worst movies of the year. We have Meg 2. I haven't seen the first Meg. And this one, a classic. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey is also nominated for Worst Picture.
I could have guessed that. I should have guessed that.
Could you guess who's on the Worst Actor category?
No. I couldn't possibly tell you.
Well, this includes...
I guess Sylvester Stallone, because he's in the Expendables.
Not this year, Sylvester Stallone, but we have Russell Crowe, who's nominated for the Pope's Exorcist, playing Father Gabriel Armand, which I guess is a real person. So he is known, he will be nominated for Worst Actor. We have Chris Evans, Captain America himself, for Ghosted.
Yeah. Okay.
Jason Statham for Meg 2. John Voight for Mercy. And hear this, Ryan. This is actually hilarious. This guy is literally, this is an iconic role. This is genuinely an iconic role. Mm-hmm. Multiple decades. Vin Diesel is nominated as Dominic Toretto for Fast 10, Worst Actor.
Has he been nominated for this before?
Oh, man. Let me quickly see.
Can you imagine if you play something for that many years and now, just now, they're like, you did that so freaking bad.
So he was nominated for a Raspberry for Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, but that's not this movie.
Okay, so Ryan, I will say this is his first nomination for Worst Actor as Dominic Toretto ever in his career. His second ever Raspberry nomination.
You know how he's in every single movie playing the same guy. How did he screw
10 times before?
Yeah, he screwed up playing a guy he's played 10 times before.
Wow, they just straight up don't respect it. You want so you want to win.
Yeah, I hope he wins.
Remember, last year he was nominated for a Kids' Choice Award in the same role, so I don't know what went wrong for Fast 9. What exactly switched? I've stopped at Fast 6.
I've seen like 3 of those movies. So
really?
What is Tokyo Drift?
The third one?
Yeah, it's the last one I saw.
Really? Yeah, I stopped after Paul Walker.
Me neither. Paul Walker's not even in the Tokyo Drift, by the way.
Exactly.
Some other guy.
So.
They had a new white guy.
We have Michael. I will say for Michael Douglas in Ant-Man and Wasp was nominated for Worst Supporting Actor.
Nice. Good for
and
him.
Bill Murray. And Sylvester Stallone did get a Worst Actor nomination for Expendables 4.
Yeah, there we go. You're welcome. That was
Mel Gibson. So I didn't even know he's still at work in Confidential Informant. He got an Oscar. So hear this.
Do these people go, do you think? Do any of these people show up to accept the award in person?
I know Sandra Bullock once accepted an award in Halle Berry. So sometimes some people have a good enough sense of humor to show up.
I would absolutely be there if I got nominated. I would be there, right there, front row to accept that award. It'd be funny.
Oh, man. Megan Fox got nominated. Kim Cattrall, I don't know who that is. Ana de Armas for Ghosted. Boy, they Ghosted, so I guess this is a rom-com.
The fall of Ana de Armas needs to be studied. We thought she was going to be like taking Hollywood by storm, but she just didn't do that.
Yeah. I guess they're just not respecting her. I mean, when you're in a... Okay, so I guess Ghosted is an Apple TV Plus romantic action adventure where both leads are nominated for Worst Actor and Actress, respectfully.
And both leads are, like, talented performers, too.
Not this time, I guess. Have you seen Shazam 2?
I saw Shazam 1, which is more than I wanted to say, but...
Oh, my God. The Razzie Redeemer Award. It is... is awarded for becoming a respected artist after having previously been nominated for a Golden Raspberry. The nominations don't come out to the day of, unfortunately. But last year's winner was Colin Farrell because he went
good for him.
He went for they literally pointed out here, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess this is your redeeming award. So he won last year because he was nominated in 2004 for a Worst Actor. Then he was a front runner for a Best Actor last year.
Yeah.
This is the other two were Val Kilmer and Mark Wahlberg, but didn't work out for them. Oh my God, this is some.
That's a fun concept. We definitely we'll have to follow up next week when we go through what happened.
They do it the day of
the Redemption Award specifically. We don't have to do the all the raspberries. doesn't matter that much. But if Dominic Toretto wins, obviously we got to talk about that. And if whoever wins the Redeemer Award, we got to lead off with them before we get into the salient details.
So who do you think is going to win the worst picture? Exorcist, worst picture. Expendables, Meg 2, Shazam, or Winnie the Pooh? You got to go with Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Yeah,
distributed by Attitude Film Distribution. Yeah.
The thing with Winnie the Pooh is when it wins, that movie's going to sell so much better.
And I think the joke was, too, you know, Winnie the Pooh public went domain. To the public domain. So yeah. This is what we're going to do
Mouse
with
is next. Steamboat Willie's about to be murdering people on a steamboat next
and win
year.
A golden raspberry. I just want to see. They have to have the critical consensus here. Yeah, by the way, I see it here. Mickey Mouse's Trap. That's what it's going to be called, the movie. First movie, major movie. Mickey Mouse's Trap.
And then what's it called? Making the movie about, which I called, The Willy Wonka Experience and the Unknown.
Oh, man.
That could be, end up there. That could end up down there sooner rather than later. I called it, and I hope those people took my advice and just trademarked everything. Trademark the Oompa Loompa doing the, you know, making drugs. Trademark the Unknown. Trademark all of it, because otherwise they just lost a ton of money.
By the way, the critical consensus for Winnie the Pooh, it simply says, oh, brother.
Not even bother.
No, oh, brother. No, it says, oh, it does say, oh, bother. Yeah. Oh, bother.
That's a Winnie the Pooh line there. Oh, bother.
Well, oh, my God. And what's crazy about this, it's going to be a cult classic anyway. So that is our favorite here, starring Nikolai Leon as Christopher Robin. Can him and Reese Frank Waterfield take home the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey worst film of the year?
I think they can.
And we'll do a double feature of that and Oppenheimer. This movie's only 84 minutes, so.
Yeah, it's easy.
Not even an hour and a half. Easy pre-show. Unbelievable stuff. Well, great work, Ryan. I'll see you at the end of the week with Tweetcap.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens until then.
All right, see you, man.
Watch the movies, everybody. Enjoy it.
Yes, and enjoy, exactly.